Today on Maine Calling, cell phone bans in schools. Today's teenagers have grown up in a world where cell phones are an essential part of life, not so much as an actual telephone, but as a portal to the world of social media, YouTube videos, gaming, and constant texting. But having these devices on them during the school day can be a distraction, or worse, can harm their emotional and mental health. I'm Cindy Hahn. School districts in Maine and across the country are grappling with how to limit cell phone use among students during the school day. At least 30 schools in Maine have decided to ban or restrict cell phones. We'll find out the reasons and how the regulations are being carried out. Also, how are parents and students reacting? What do you think of banning cell phones in schools? Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working this summer to purchase and protect the historic Morris Farm in Wiscasset. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org. By Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We've all seen it. Teenagers hunched over their phones, completely absorbed. That's why so many schools in Maine are deciding to separate students from their phones for the sake of their learning and their well-being. We'll learn more about this movement to ban or restrict cell phone use in schools. Joining me today are Steve Bailey, he is Executive Director of the Maine School Management Association, and Jake Langlais is Superintendent of Liston Public Schools. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you think schools should ban cell phones? Or do you think there's a place for cell phones during the school day? We especially encourage students to share your thoughts on this issue. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Steve, I know at least 30 schools in Maine have already decided to restrict or ban cell phones. This is a nationwide trend as well. We're seeing this all over the place. What ages are we talking about, and what is the range of restrictions, the all-out bans for the whole school day, limited access to phones? Give us a sense of what's happening.
Certainly. We've seen a variety of restrictions and or bans, and I guess I would like to point out, first of all, though, that the attention may be new or renewed with regard to this particular emphasis, but schools have had in place for quite some time policies within their districts that limit and or restrict the use of cell phones, typically during the school day. Sometimes it's, you know, from the time they get off the bus and onto the school grounds, and then afterwards. Sometimes it's during instructional time when teachers would want to make sure that students, you know, were attending to what the focus of the day would be. And other schools, they do allow some use during lunchtime or breaks in between classes. But that is pretty much specific to school district by school district. But this is a renewed focus. And certainly there's a large concern around mental health of our students. And so I do think that that's one of the areas, one of the reasons why this particular type of emphasis is coming about at this particular point in time.
And most commonly, it's what age range?
Typically middle school and high school, although you very would not see at the pre-K to grade 5 level, although there have been some instances where schools have had to make sure that students were not using phones if they have been given to their children in grades 4 and 5. But more specifically, it's eighth grade, middle school and high school.
Okay. And Jake, let me turn to you. I know Steve already touched upon some of the reasons this is happening, but let's get right to it. It's not just distraction that
that part's kind of obvious that the phone in the classroom is rather distracting. I mean, talk about that first, actually, in that were students just looking at their phones in the classroom? And then beyond that, what are some of the other reasons for restricting cell phone use?
Yeah, I think we saw a lot of distraction, and I can't help but think of what I see in my own experiences of how you can get stuck scrolling something. And even if there's nothing overly useful, we find ourselves losing 1, 2, 5, 10, 15 minutes at a time, just kind of looking at whatever else is out there on the screen that's facing us. And the other thing we've seen, at least here in Lewiston, because we've had some shifts in rules a couple of years ago, is a reduction in peer-to-peer conflict. So the dialogue that would happen, you know, on the playground or in the hallway can happen anywhere, and not just during the school day. We're seeing it happen all hours of the night. And so we not only do we have bans up to eighth grade in our schools, and then it's regulated at the high school level, we're also encouraging families and trying to share tips with them about healthy screen time and plugging it in, you know, in a different space other than a bedroom or wherever the kids would have access to overnight, so that they can have time away, but also not be tempted to engage in an unsupervised conversation that happens at 2 o'clock in the morning is not typically positive. So we're finding that's been helpful.
So that's even beyond the school day. You're helping families figure out how to use cell phones more. And like you said, for adults as well, not just the kids. Right.
Yeah, just trying to educate people with the disruption. And I think, too, it's important when before cell phones or this level of media that was so easily accessible, you got a break. So even if you had some conflict with peers at school, when you went home, you know, you didn't communicate with each other. And now it can, you know, if it gets escalated, it can be relentless all hours of the day and not have a break at all.
Yeah. And you referenced what you've done in Lewiston. So give us a sense of when you sort of made things more strict and what the before and after looks like for that.
So it was about 2 years ago in we started the school year. We changed policy here in the district that our elementary schools, which happened to be pre-K to six, cell phones were not allowed. You couldn't have them out. If you had one on you, it had to be in your bag and it had to be off. And we extended that up to our middle school, which happens to be seventh and eighth grade, same condition. And then the high school, we have it's I would say regulated because it's kids can have their phones. And I think it's important that they do have them for reasons of learning how to appropriately use them. It's kind of a bit of a life skill, and we could try to coach them on that and when to focus on other things and put them away. They can use them in transitions, the cafeteria, study halls. But when they're in their classrooms, they should not be using them. And we ask our teachers to be consistent with that enforcement. They've done a pretty good job. But that big transition happened 2 years ago. And what we found a year ago, we actually had some students who were transitioning to high school who said, I wish you couldn't have your phone in high school also, because they had lived through some years of a lot of drama and some bullying on the phones and just that relentless kind of communication on different platforms. And they wanted a break from it. And when it was not allowed at the middle school level, they actually felt great relief. And so we talk about, you know, a student's wellness and being their best selves, it's hard to do if there's a constant barrage of negative communication. So they were actually wanting the school committee to explore extending it into the high school.
And is that, you think, going to happen?
I don't know that will happen, but I do think it warrants more conversation. And so the students brought that forward, and I think we want to continue to have conversation about it. I do think there will be a pretty significant pushback. In all reality, not just from students, but also from parents who communicate with their children regularly throughout the day. So I think there'd be pushback, but it was an interesting thing that a member of our community, you know, our youth, that had that shift happen to them in a sense and have them feel more at ease day to day with school and want to continue that at the high school level.
Yeah, that is so interesting. The natural assumption is all the students would just be against, you know, taking away their phones, but they learned, I guess, from experience. That is very interesting. Steve, we've touched upon the idea of social media being a big problem going on the phones. Can you address just, you know, it's big in the news, the negative effects of kids, either even if they're not addicted to social media, but the various damages to their mental health or emotional health from being on there so much?
Well, what's interesting, and this is something that I think has been made a little bit of more awareness for us, is even by a book recently that's come out in terms of the anxious generation, which has spoken a little bit about why and how it's even more destructive for teenage girls to be involved, or even younger girls to be involved. And it seems to be the social media seems to lead and have a causal relationship there to both anxiety as well as depression in terms of, you know, frequent or long-term use of these. And Jay Kearney spoke about the types of conversations that can occur, you know, both after school or as well as long into the night, and how that can have negative effects regarding social development as well as self-worth and concern for confidence that these young developing youth, you know, will be having in terms of how the social media effects of phones might have on them.
So this is the new form of bullying that we see now. It's not the fighting and, you know, taunting in person. It's virtual bullying.
And often it's in its isolation, or meaning that it's done, you know, one-on-one or one with many in terms of, but you're not in a social setting. And so the level of ability to be able to protect or provide supports for these individuals is much more difficult.
Jake, pick up on that a little bit in terms of that combined with a lack of face-to-face interactions that they're losing when they're sitting next to each other instead of talking, they're on their phones. What do you see there in terms of this whole generation not having the same face-to-face interactions with each other or with teachers?
Yeah, we are definitely seeing that interpersonal skill set decline from my observations. Students are much less prepared to have certain kinds of conversations, but then ironically, in other ways, they seem to be, they communicate in a less restricted way, or they're not as nervous or cautious. So it's kind of strange to see a bit of a paradigm with not knowing how to start up a conversation from an interpersonal place, because they don't do that with other people. But then the things that they will say once that conversation is going, I think lands itself in a very unskilled, unfiltered sort of way. And I think students are having to develop those skills when they are approaching that college readiness level, you know, getting jobs, going to work. They're really having to develop a lot of skills in a hurry that in the past kids would develop over years.
Yeah, because, I mean, as you mentioned, adults are just as guilty of this trend, right, of being on our phones more than talking to each other. But we've had lives before that where we had to do that. This generation is pretty much the first that zero experience in their lives of not having cell phones and social media part of their lives, right?
Yeah, and so many things that are automated from text to speech to text to even, you know, the writing of a complete message when something is sent can be minimized and shortcut. So I worry about fluency and the ability to read and understand other texts as from a learning perspective. But I think the other piece of this too that I always worry about with that interpersonal component is, what filter do we expect, say, a 12-year-old to have when they're talking to other 12-year-olds, when they have a device that can access the World Wide Web that might have parental protections on it or not? The things that they can see, do, and share. It's really a lot to think about from, you know, a touch of trauma almost, or kids being exposed to things that they wouldn't otherwise be exposed to, and then sharing them amongst each other. It can be a real concerning environment, especially if it's unchecked.
Steve, I know that many states have just across the board banned cell phones or restricted cell phones. I think Florida started doing that. Several states have done that. What discussion is happening in Maine as far as a statewide, some sort of regulation that is across Maine?
Well, I do believe that that is in the planning stages, at least in terms of looking at what type of a task force that could be involved to maybe research this issue. I know that The Maine School Superintendents Association recently put out a survey to our members to be able to identify, you know, what level of restriction indoor, you know, cell phone ban is in place or plans to be in place. I think legislatively, this is something that, you know, will be looked at or during this next session. One of the things that I would hope that folks would do would be to take a look at the differing needs that are out there by district as well as by age level. So to have a all across the state, you know, one size fits all ban, I think may be a little bit problematic, which is why I think researching the issue would be wise before, you know, a bill would be put forward that would restrict in the same way for everywhere across the state.
Well, for those districts that have put in some kind of restrictions, it's either the school board or the superintendent who's been deciding in those cases. How much input do parents, students, and even teachers, how much do they have a say in what the decision is?
Well, it's interesting. Initially, I mean, if you take a look at the policies that are in place within districts, many of these have been in place for quite some time. And so, you know, the policy would say, and this is the MSMA sample policy that I'm reading from right now, but the following provisions apply to student use of cell phones and other electronic devices. Students are prohibited from using privately owned electronic devices, including but not limited to cell phones, smartphones, other electronic devices, at school or during school activities, except when the teacher or building principal authorizes use for a specific educational health or safety purpose. So that's language that's been in play for, you know, quite some time. So I think and when policies are developed and accepted by the school board, typically they have two public readings where there is a policy committee that brings it to the full school board, and the school board both has a chance to be able to discuss that within the board and then have a second reading to make sure that it's confirmed in terms of this is what they want to do. And prior to that, within the policy committee work, often the policy committee would bring in different interested parties into the conversation to be able to gain some level of input, to be able to say, what is the nuance or what is the change or what is the adjustment or revision that would be considered, you know, during this particular implementation. So I think that's going to vary district by district, but still that opportunity is there. And Jake, do you have opportunities to be able to say how or why both staff and or students might have some input there?
Yeah, we try to have we invite those voices. We'll do student groups whenever we're trying to design a problem solve. We try to bring people that are most closely proximate to the issue or the topic, and I think there are times that we make adult decisions, but we definitely want the feedback from the students. And most of the feedback from students when we were putting policies in place was really about them having to change habits. And like Steve mentioned earlier, it was really around the middle school. The elementary students more or less didn't have their phones very often until about that fifth, sixth grade. But yeah, we did bring students into a conversation to see what their thoughts were. And we actually had a local leadership group that works with the city of students, the youth advisory group. We asked them to also provide their feedback on what we were looking at. So students did have voice there. The number one thing that we heard from parents was making sure they were able to communicate with their children. If something should arise, it was really about safety and kind of having a pulse on their kids, which is another whole layer of potentially developmentally challenging, unhealthy. You know, I sometimes use words like helicopter parent or bubble. You know, just if the number one distraction at school is your mom or dad messaging you constantly, that's a different layer of challenge. But we have to be mindful that's also happening.
Well, as a parent, my first reaction is always like, well, what if I need to tell them that I'm picking them up after school, you know? But I guess that kind of thing just goes back through the secretary like it used to in the office. Is that what's happening more?
Yeah, sure does. We still have, you know, phones in our offices and kids can call out and parents can still call in. We can still get a message to their students and make sure it's relayed.
Okay, great. Well, lots to learn about this. We are going to take a quick break. Our topic today is cell phone use in schools, and this is Maine Calling. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. More Maine schools are turning to cell phone restrictions. Why and does it help students? My guests are Jake Langlais, he's superintendent of Lewiston Public Schools, and Steve Bailey is the executive director of the Maine School Management Association. Join the conversation. Is your school debating the impact of cell phone use on students? How dependent are you on your phone? Let us know your thoughts. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And calling in now is Katie Joseph. She's the assistant superintendent for RSU1. That's the Bath School District. Thanks for joining us, Katie.
Happy to be here and help.
So you all are in the news for having a new cell phone policy there in Bath. Tell us what you've decided to put into place.
Sure. So after researching this for the past year, we did pass a change to our guidelines and our policy that students in 6th through 12th grade will each have a Yonder pouch, which is a pouch that magnetizes closed, and they'll use it on their way into the building where they'll put their cell phone and a smartwatch if they have one. They'll magnetize it closed. It will stay shut for the whole day, so they won't be able to use it. And then as they leave the building, they'll be able to unmagnetize it and have it for after-school activities, however they get home and whatnot. But there will be no use during the day.
And this is kicking in right when the kids come back, right?
The very first day, yes, we will be handing out the pouches.
Oh, wow. And what was there a catalyst? What led to saying this is the time to start the policy?
Sure. So post-COVID, our district, as well as many others across the street, had just been looking at different ways to reduce anxiety and depression amongst our teenagers. And, you know, we've done that through using our federal funds to hire more social workers that we got during COVID. And we've been constantly looking for other ways to reduce the anxiety we see in our students. And a lot of research recently has come out about how social media, screen time, cell phone use actually increases that characteristic among students. And so a group of administrators and myself, along with our SRO, who works for the Bath Police Department, and us, got together and read much of the research to determine if we also felt like this is something that could help our students in our sort of quest to help with mental health amongst all of them. And, you know, we became actually very passionate about what we found and felt like it was doable, but we needed to get feedback and put many things into place. And so that's sort of what we spent the spring doing after we agreed that the decision was likely one that would have a positive impact.
So what are you hearing from students and parents? A negative reaction,
yeah,
positive?
So during our process, we sent out I sent out a survey to all of our families pre-K to 12, to our students in 9 through 12, and to all of our staff. And we got actually very high response. I send a lot of surveys out, and these got very high responses. It's something people feel very passionately about either way. So we had near 500 families respond to our survey, and actually most of them were very much in support of reducing screen time, making sure that students were paying attention during class time. Teachers overwhelmingly were in support of this as well, just because even if you have a policy or guidelines that says students should have their phones in their bag, for instance, you know, many will have it in their pocket or have it under their desk and be using it or use it in the hallway. And so they're still out and about. I mean, I've never been in a building where, regardless of the policy, you really don't ever see a cell phone. And so the teachers spend a lot of their days asking students to put them away or, you know, talking to them about taking their earbuds out so they can pay attention, you know, not looking at their watch. And so they were very much in support. The only survey that came back that was really questioning the change, and this makes a lot of sense, is the students. Their responses were almost the exact opposite of parents and teachers, where they didn't feel it had an impact on their academics or mental health and didn't think any change needed to be made.
Huh. Well, that's so interesting. Good luck with that as this big change is kicking off. And thank you for sharing all the good information. That was Katie Joseph, and she is the assistant superintendent for RSU1 in Bath. Steve, I just wanted to ask you whether there have been research studies, anything like that, to correlate whether reducing cell phone use and academic performance. Is there any sort of evidence that this is helping?
I think the research has been more empirical in terms of what comes back from specifically in terms of what Jake mentioned, as well as what we've seen from other schools where discipline referrals go down. And then they also see on the flip side of that, the positiveness of the student, you know, face-to-face interactions, as opposed to the other piece that that happens as a result of the increased cell phone use. So
sure.
What we see from other districts, both across the state as well as the country, is that, yes, it does help with the academic improved performance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's hear from Matthew, who is calling in from Portland. Hi, Matthew. What did you want to talk about?
Hi, thanks for having me on the show. I want to also voice my support of a total cell phone ban during the school day. One thing that I haven't heard talked about yet on the program today is sort of like the why students are still sort of accessing their phones when they shouldn't be. Some people, teachers included, think it is oftentimes like a matter of choice or just distraction. But I also want to point out that social media apps are designed intentionally to be as addictive as possible to capitalize on people's attention. It is truly an attention economy. They get their profit from people's attention. And so the creators of these apps have been using psychological tricks to hook users kind of as early as possible. They want teenagers to start using their apps so that they can become lifelong users. Now, I do not think it is appropriate for school districts to offer a choice for students who are still developing their, you know, the part of their brain that allows them to make these complex long-term decisions, and having students grapple against the wills of these powerful tech companies and their profit motives.
Yeah, Matthew, I'd like to hear from our panelists about that. Thank you for sharing that very interesting point. So, Jake, as far as what Matthew's saying, you know, the addictiveness of social media, is that something that it just can't be controlled?
I think it's very challenging to control it. And I think that, I mean, we know the algorithms, they're set up, they're, you know, getting smarter and smarter at engaging us. Like I said, when we started, it's easy to scroll for 15 minutes and not realize if you looked at anything useful. It's also a powerful tool in an education setting because of the access to information. But how do we teach kids how to use that productively? I do think the caller mentioned maybe kids shouldn't have that choice, or maybe they should. But I do think it's important that we set the stage with it. And I think the other component that we haven't talked a lot about is the power struggle of cell phones. And so if you set the stage for that, especially like we're doing here with up to eighth grade, students know that that's the expectation. And for some, it sets them at ease. For some, it causes them anxiety because they can't check and they want to know, and did somebody post something or say something that I need to be a part of? Mostly from that stage of development of that sense of adequacy and knowing that you're in good standing with others, especially at that middle school level, when that identity crisis is happening for kids, for every kid. And I think about the distractions of, you know, if it becomes a power struggle in a classroom, say at the high school level, where it's permissible in spaces, but not all day long, what happens to the dynamic of a teaching and learning environment when a teacher is head to head with a student that they need to put it away and they won't? Or what's going on in that student's world where they can't put the phone down? Is it legitimate? Is it not? And how we navigate that? So I think choice is important because I think our kids need to develop the skill to choose. But I do think at a younger age, we set the stage so we can avoid the power struggle and alleviate the stressors of having to know, and continue to teach kids how to filter that information that they have access to.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for that question, Matthew. And actually joining us on the line now is someone who can elaborate further on this point. This is Brooke Shannon calling in, Executive Director and Founder of Wait Until 8th. Thanks for calling, Brooke.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you heard what we were just talking about. It relates to what you're doing. Explain what Wait Until 8th aims to do and why.
Wait Until 8th is a national movement that empowers parents to come together around delaying smartphones. So the average age or grade that most kids are getting smartphones is around fourth or fifth grade. Although most parents don't want to say yes to such a powerful device at such an early age, there's this community pressure to kind of give in earlier than you would like. So the pledge is really a resource to help link parents up with other parents who want to delay the smartphone until the end of eighth grade. And it gets you through all the elementary school years and middle school years and gives kids more time being kids.
And how did you decide to focus on eighth grade in particular as sort of the transition point?
Most experts say that it's around the age 14 that you shouldn't introduce devices before that time. Elementary school years especially are important for development. They're important for playing, for learning, for even being bored. And that carries on into middle school too. It's important in those years for our kids to have time and space to grow and to develop. And a smartphone gets in the way with that. And so the pledge is until the end of eighth grade, and it protects those formative years for our kids. It gives them time and space to learn who they are, to grow and to develop, to have more time on their schools and their hobbies. And it gives them more time and connection to their relationships with their family and their friends as well.
And I understand you're coming to Maine to speak about this. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so I am flying into Maine tomorrow. I will be speaking with the Corinth community on Wednesday around 6 o'clock at the elementary school there. And it's really just a gathering to help parents in the digital age. Regardless if you've said yes or no to a smartphone or to social media, there's always things that we can do as parents to rein in how kids are using these devices. So I'll talk a lot about reasons on why to delay smartphones, but I'll also equip parents who've already said yes how to rein it back, rein it in a little bit, and give them some tips and resources in order to reduce time spent on smartphones and social media.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing that information. That was Brooke Shannon, and she's the founder and executive director of Wait Until 8th. And we'll go now to a call from Todd, who is calling in from Rumford. Hi, Todd. Go ahead.
Hello, 26 years in the classroom, teacher of the year for phys ed, 23. I am an absolute piece of contradiction with this.
I
want a nature-based approach to going outside, but I also have students use meaningful apps during a variety of physical ed activities. And I think you need to meet students where they're at and engage them with what they like and are comfortable with, and they're digital natives. So enhance the learning through technology. But there's also that moment where you, hey, everybody, close and focus. You'll not be needing those phones for what we're doing next. I think it's good teachers understand what good classroom management looks like. Abandoning technology in a day and age that will require high levels of technology literacy is a disservice to students. So there's a balance point there someplace, and I think there's a lot of good people out there working to find it.
Thanks for that perspective, Todd. Good to hear a different angle on it. So, Jake, it sounds like you're somewhat espousing the same philosophy, especially with the high school students. You're saying, you know, let them have their phones, but teach them to use them the right way.
Yeah, I think the power of the devices as a tool in different apps is really amazing. I think of the things that we use. I mean, I myself as an adult, I run a laptop most of the day, but I can do everything on my phone that I can do on a laptop. And I think everybody knows the power of the devices we have in our hands. And I think there's a lot of apps that parents can help their kids make good decisions with by not allowing them on there. I know as a school administrator that we I can tell you the trends of different apps, maybe without saying them on the air, of the apps that kids tend to be in when they are getting themselves into deeper trouble or having more and more conflict with their peers. But there's also tons of apps that allow kids to access education in ways that they never could before. I know we have seniors or juniors at the high school level right now that are accessing full college courses, and they don't have to buy a textbook. They don't have to purchase other study guides and things of that nature, because it's all electronic. It's all available through the school's site or the school's app. So there's a lot of powerful tools connected to the apps and things that people can use. But again, I would always say it's so important. How do you check yourself for time? How do you, if you're recreating for a few minutes, so be it, but how do you monitor that so you don't look up and think, where did a half an hour go, instead of maybe a 5 minute, you know, separation from whatever you're doing? And to be mindful around that as it relates to work and production and getting things done and efficiency. But we have to teach that to kids.
Yeah, we can all relate. Yeah, we can all relate to that feeling, certainly. We are going to take another quick break. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. We will get to more calls right after the break, and we will be right back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn, and we are talking about how Maine schools are addressing cell phone use and how banning or restricting phones affects students. With me are Steve Bailey with the Maine School Management Association and Jake Langlais with Lewiston Schools. Share your questions or comments. What are you concerned about in terms of cell phone use among young people? Can you live without your phone for several hours? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or call 1-800-399-3566. And let's go now to Reed calling in from Hamden. Hi, Reed. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you folks today?
Good. What did you want to talk about?
I've been a teacher, an English teacher, for 22 years, and I've just noticed some interesting trends because of the cell phones and in terms of kids' ability. One of the things that when I talk to my students is that I will give them an assignment that should take them a half an hour to do, but when they're home with their cell phones working on it, it will take them an hour and a half because their work is divided up with, you know, the constant need to check and text and scroll and things like that. So I'm seeing a lot more of a fragmented workflow from them, and it ends up some kids, it takes them much longer to do their homework because they can't really settle into just the work. They've got to have that phone going at the same time. And
okay,
one of the things, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go. You can finish up and I'll see what our guests have to say.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And then just the other one last thing I want to just say is I think part of the problem is that we are giving kids at a very young age a lot of technology in place of some of the things that used to be traditional, like reading to them, playing with blocks, coloring, things like that. Kids are getting tablets at 2-3 years old, and they get trained that they need that level of stimulation to actually complete a task, that kind of buzzing and beeping and all this. So some kids really have a hard time with independent reading because it's not flashy. That's all. I'll just listen.
Yeah, good to have you calling in, Reed. Thank you. And Steve, comment on that, the use of technology and what it may be replacing.
Well, there have been times where I've been concerned with the superficiality, I guess I would call it, of grazing along the tops of information and the need to be able to be in touch with all those types of things that are happening, while at the same time not necessarily devoting the time necessary to engage in deep thought. And one of the thoughts that the caller just reminded me of was, you know, having the need to be able to actually to read a book, and how the text, whether it be online or whether it be, you know, the paper itself, just being able to have the time to devote to that and what that causes, you know, within the brain to be able to connect, make connections with other things that are related to that specific topic. So the previous caller had talked about there are times and places for other devices. And I think it is important for our students to be able to recognize the advantages of the technology and the tools that we have at our disposal, yet at the same time, creating that balance of being able to have and devote time to be able to make the best use of dedicated time for the task at hand.
Okay, thanks for your call, Reed. And let's go now to Maka is calling in from Bridgeton. Hi, Maka, go ahead.
Hi, I'm tuning in a bit late, so I apologize if this was already talked about. It's not as much about distractions, but as a very anxious person, I just can't help but wonder what sort of extra security measures would be taking place if kids did have their phone, like, ready at any moment to be able to call for an emergency. And I know Maine doesn't really have as big of an issue with that as other states, but it's just something that I can't help but think about.
Sure, those safety and security reasons are among the many that I think some parents are concerned about not having the phones. Steve, can you speak to that?
I was going to actually look at Jake to that, but I think
sure.
You know, safety and security is certainly a big issue. And from a school perspective, from a district's perspective, you know, there wants to be, and Jake mentioned this earlier, I mean, there are phones in school, there are people in school to make sure that there's ready access for people to be able to both make calls out as well as to receive calls.
Yes, and Jake, of course, you sadly had more than enough experience with this, with the shootings in Lewiston last year. So can you add to what Steve said?
Yeah, I think the safety and security piece is critical, but I do want people to know that schools have crisis management plans. They're established, they're practiced. We have different communication devices. For example, in Lewiston, we have handheld radios that contact or work directly with our local 911 center and law enforcement. So administrators have those and offices have those. So we actually could use a cell phone or a landline phone or a voice over internet phone, but we also have radios and plans in place for those scenarios. I can share a situation that happened years ago as a principal. There was a bomb threat written on a bathroom stall, and we took our safety precautions as we otherwise would. And someone had posted on social media that this thing was happening at noontime, and we dismissed 249 kids at lunch. And it really created a more chaotic scene than it needed to be, because of the cell phone communication between kids and their parents. And also people posting things on apps and social media. It really created more fear than was necessary, more chaos from a pickup. You know, we have to identify parents when kids are going with them, angry parents because they're taking the neighbor's kid, and we can't do that. So there was the safety and security piece is a very real component. And I think that people want to have that instant information. And so much of today is like that. But I do want it said that it can sometimes complicate scenarios and situations in which we're trying to keep people safe and carry out a reunification or things like that smoothly in a way that has less chaos to it.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. You know, we don't realize how basically everybody's on their phones at that time. So thanks for that explanation. And we'll go now to Catherine calling from the Midcoast. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling in from the Midcoast, and my child goes to the Riley School, which has been no tech and then low tech since its founding about 50 years ago. And these kids have access to the outdoors, many resources, and tech is not really necessary. And there's a no phone policy as well.
Okay, so your point basically is if you've got a lot of other options that you're making readily available to the kids, then it kind of squeezes out the tech, and that's a great point. Steve, I just wanted to, we're getting closer to the end, so I wanted to ask about school buses. What generally is the policy for phones on the bus to and from school? A lot of conversations that maybe don't happen anymore among kids when they're riding the bus if they're on their phones.
I think this is going to vary policy to policy and the district to district, but I think that is one of the area too that enforcement of something like that would be pretty difficult to enforce, and to expect a bus driver who's a single adult on the bus, you know, with students, is an area where they would be left by themselves to try to put that in place. So I think we do see most of the policies that are in place speak about when the students arrive at school. Would that be consistent with what you've seen, Jake?
Yeah, I think it's really drivers have expressed that they don't want to be recorded while they're driving, things of that nature. But as far as kids having phones on the buses and using them, it's really difficult to govern. We have not had a lot of phone issues on buses. Typically when we do, because kids, for all their strengths, are not good at hiding something when it's exciting. So if you have, you know, four heads that are climbing over seats to look at someone's screen, that's usually, you know, something on the screen is maybe more interesting than that age of student should have. but that usually nipped pretty quick because of what it looks like to the driver who's trying to monitor the students. But really not a lot of issues related to phones or incidents on buses from our perspective.
Okay, let's now go to Denise, who is calling in from Alma. Hi, Denise, you're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thank you. My only point question is that I think we're selling our kids short. I think creating classes starting in maybe middle school would be more appropriate. We know abstinence only never works. So why aren't we teaching our kids about cyberbullying directly on phones in a classroom with social expectations and things of that nature? My kids got phones fairly young, but they've had a strong emphasis on that. And I think if we expect more of our kids and teach them proper usage, we would be better off than trying to ban them, because they're going out there in the future and they need to know how to use these tools.
Yeah, that's the same principle as saying if you ban candy, then the kids are going to crave candy, right? So, Steve, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it does come down to can there be universal development of good plans, you know, family to family, school to school, and you know, so that is something that is out there. I do think that making sure that digital citizenship is one of the components of our instruction, both be it with students as well as with families. I think you're helping folks understand, you know, the positive uses of them as well as how they can be dangerous in terms of their use. That's something that we continue to need to be part of our educational effort.
Thank you for that question, Denise. We have an email from Sarah. This kind of goes to what you mentioned, Jake. She said, I've heard stories of teachers using phones too much. Are there any proposed guidelines for limiting a teacher's use of their phone? And you said, Jake, that that's part of what you do there, right?
Yes, we do have professional expectations, and we have had to, you know, have conversations of, you know, HR-like conversations with some staff who are connected to it and can't put it down. And so we worry that the job of teaching our kids and supporting our students is not getting done. So we've actually had to have some of those human resource interactions with staff who really struggle to focus on the task at hand. You know, multitasking has its limitations. There's some people out there who have studied it who say you can't actually do it. So whether you're talking about the homework that took too long or the staff member that's not providing the support they need to, the phone needs to be put down unless it's being used intentionally.
Yeah, and kids know if you're giving a distracted answer to them too, right? They can tell. Steve, what about the fact that students have laptops still and that they can use those the same way they use the phones? I mean, is there no end to trying to regulate and have some kind of policy for how they're using their laptops, and how would that work?
Well, that still is an issue, and it was one in terms of when students were first made available, when laptops were made available to students. And there are computer use policies that are in place to make sure that, again, the digital citizenship piece that is taught for cell phone use is also there with a laptop or computer use. So it's a complete package effort, I believe. And obviously, in terms of the laptops that were introduced for educational purposes, that is still there and still very strong in terms of how they are supposed to be used. But again, to be used smartly and intentionally as well as productively is a teaching effort that we're still paying attention to.
Okay, and here's an email from McGilly. I'm a family physician looking closely at the neurological effect that the 7 to 8 hours average that children can spend on their phones has. In response to the idea that apps can be educational in the classroom, I feel they have access to laptops for this reason. Phone culture makes it seem as though the urgency and immediacy of having the information at our fingertips is crucial. However, the research supports that at these developmental stages, the children can't separate the usefulness from the addiction, and it affects their social wiring detrimentally. The introduction of this tech at the appropriate ages, 14 for smartphones, 16 for social media or app use, seems the safest, most supportive way to handle this issue. So a lot of developmental issues of concern there. Jake, a quick response and see what you say.
I think that's a great statement. And just a reminder to parents that there are parental controls you can put on these devices. You can password protect them so that you can govern what apps are on, what apps are not on. And remember that when you do updates, sometimes those controls can modify. So you want to make sure you're involved in your child's phone being updated and making sure that you have password protections and you're limiting the use as the guidelines would recommend.
Good advice. Thank you both so much for joining us today. Very useful conversation. Jake Langlace is the superintendent of Lewiston Public Schools, and Steve Bailey is executive director of the Maine School Management Association. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris, and you can visit the Maine Calling website to listen to past programs or to sign up for our weekly newsletter. And remember, the Maine Public Vox Pop app is another way to interact with Maine Calling. You can record voice messages on your phone, and you can share your thoughts that way. Tomorrow on the program, thinking about retirement and what that means for different people. I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.